NBA writer Chris Sheridan with the Bull and the Fox here on the Fan. Chris, how are you today?
I'm good. It's Adam, right?
Yes.
Hey, Adam. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Doing well, Chris. Thanks for joining us. You know, I see on your website today you have a poll. Who do you think is the MVP right now? And your choices are LeBron James, Derrick Rose, Kobe Bryant, Kevin Durant, or other. And I would say, you know, a more appropriate poll for LeBron James would be, you know, instead of the MVP, the MUBGP, which is the most unimpressive big game player. For that, I would vote for him.
Well, I invite you to vote in that. You can vote for somebody else. And, you know, I just put up a column in which I voted for other, because there's an argument to be made that Kevin Love is the MVP of the NBA right now, with the Minnesota Timberwolves sitting one game over 500 when they were expected to be, you know, Bobcat material and at the bottom of the league. And, you know, if you remember the Chris Paul to the Clippers trade, the league office started running that trade, and what they really wanted was the Clippers to give up Minnesota's draft pick because right. they thought it was going to be a lottery pick. And Kevin Love, with his double-doubles, and he's in the top five in rebounding, and he's the top five in scoring, and he leads the league in minutes played. And he's got what was expected to be a horrible team playing above 500 basketball and right in the thick of a very tight Western Conference playoff race. So my vote was other, and I encourage you guys to go ahead and cast a vote and your listeners to cast a vote on SheridanHoops.com. Who's the MVP? I know it's early. We're only a third of the way through, but it's never too early to start that debate.
You know, the funny thing is when it comes to LeBron James is that it almost, you know, we talk about this all the time. The Heat of the one team, it doesn't. The Heat could have gone 66-0 this year. It does not matter. Unless they win the championship, their season is a complete L.
Yeah, have they gotten to 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, or 7 yet?
Yeah, we're still waiting for that, Chris.
You know, I can come on Cleveland radio and feed you guys stuff like that all
sure,
day.
Sure, sure.
but, it, you know, here's the thing with LeBron. Until he validates himself by winning a championship, but not only winning it, by performing in the fourth quarter, people are going to have very, very legitimate doubts about this guy, especially after what happened in the NBA Finals last year when he disappeared against Dallas in every single fourth quarter. And then in the biggest Eastern Conference game of the season two Sundays ago against the Chicago Bulls, here's the final minute for the Miami Heat. LeBron comes down, dribbles out the entire shot clock, takes a crazy contested jumper and misses. Next time down court, LeBron James dribbles out the entire shot clock, dribbles into the middle and has his shot altered by Joakim Noah and misses. Next possession, LeBron James goes to the foul line, misses two free throws. That's not a guy I want. I don't want to have the ball in his hands in the final minute of the game if I'm the Miami Heat, especially if I have Dwayne Wade on my team. Dwayne Wade having the ball in his hands in the last minute has worked very, very well for the Miami Heat over the past 7-8 years, and it's a problem that Eric Spoelstra's got to deal with. And it seems like this year they're going more to LeBron in the final minute than they did last year. And I wonder how much longer that's going to keep going and whether when it comes down to playoff time, the ball goes into Dwayne Wade's hands and let Dwayne create like he's always done and done so well.
Chris, I couldn't agree with you more. And we were just talking a little bit ago about, you know, how big of a clutch player Kobe Bryant is compared to LeBron James. But something else we brought up, we were talking about that, is I don't know if you see this when you watch the Heat. You obviously, I'm sure, watch the Heat more than we do here in Cleveland. But just watching them last night, do you get the sense that these guys, for whatever reason, like flip the switch on and off when they play teams like the Cavs or, you know, teams that aren't like the Bulls or a big time matchup that's on ABC or something? Because when I watch this team, it seems like they could have put the Cavs away in the second quarter last night. Let's face it, the Cavs are playing with six guys. The Heat have three superstars. And if they ran and played defense, they could have won that game by 30 points. No, Chris?
Yeah, you make a very good point. And they've done it twice against the Milwaukee Bucks. Those are their last two losses. And the most recent game up in Milwaukee, LeBron went off for 24 points in the first quarter. And it looked like he was going to have 60 or 70. And it took everybody else out of the game. And the Bucks were way, way down in the first half of that game and came back and won that and beat the Heat pretty handily. And, you know, you didn't really see that in Cleveland. LeBron would go off for 20, 24 in the first quarter, and he finished with 38, 42, 44. And that didn't happen that night. It took the whole rest of the team out of the game. And it was a dog game. It's a game up in Milwaukee on a weeknight. They're all cold. They're not all really into it. And they do turn the switch on and off depending on the caliber of the opponent. One of the reasons they do that is because they're an elite team, and they're going to get up for some teams more than they're going to get up for others. And with the way the schedule has been stacked this season, Miami's going to play every single good team because the TV partners want them on TV as much as possible. And so some of the lesser teams are going to have fewer games against elite teams, and it's going to lead to some teams having lopsided good records when they haven't really beat anybody. And a case in point is the Atlanta Hawks. They're 16-9, but they're undefeated against sub-500 teams, and they're way below 500 against teams that have winning records. But their schedule is stacked with so many games against poor teams, they're going to go into the playoffs with a very nice record, but it's going to be fool's gold. They're a paper tiger. The Atlanta Hawks don't put fear into anybody out there. So I agree with you on your Miami Heat point, though.
We're talking with Chris Sheridan from SheridanHoops.com. You know, yesterday we spent the part of the show talking about the fact, hey, we in Cleveland need to make the Cavs the headline when they play the Heat and not LeBron. And then we have you on, and one of the first couple of things we're talking about is LeBron and the Heat. So let's get to the Cavs here, who are an interesting team. You know, we're enjoying watching them play, Chris, and you know, they're 9-14 outside of a weekend, I guess a month ago at this point, or maybe 3 weeks ago, I can't remember exactly when it was, when they got bombed in consecutive nights by the Bulls and Hawks. They've been in every game against every tough team they've played. Yesterday's game, I mean, again, three of their first nine players out on the road, the Heat completely healthy, and they battled them deep into the fourth quarter. And they've done that most nights against good teams. What do you make of the Cavs so far, Chris?
You know, I mentioned it in my power rankings this week. The Cleveland Cavaliers and the Minnesota Timberwolves are the two teams I enjoy watching more than anybody else. I love watching Kyrie. I just fell in love with watching this guy. He is a gamer. And we didn't get to see him play much at Duke because he was hurt. But if he hit that one finger roll against Indiana early in the season, the Cavs are right up there tied with the Knicks, fighting for that eighth spot. I mean, they're right in it. And I love watching Varejao play. I really hope he makes the All-Star team. I think he deserves it. But I think one of those two guys is going to end up getting snubbed, whether it's Kyrie or whether it's Anderson.
You think one of the two is going to make it, Chris?
Yeah, I think one of the two is going to make it.
What are they announcing tomorrow?
I think Anderson's going to make it, but I think he's teetering. There's a lot of good forwards in the East.
Right.
Certainly there's not as many in the West, and there's going to be a super snub in the West. Because, look, Dirk Nowitzki and Tim Duncan aren't even in the argument this year. Kevin Love and LaMarcus Aldridge are definitely going to make it as reserves. And then, you know, what about Paul Millsap from the Utah Jazz, who's been a machine, kind of like Varejao, just a little bit shorter and not quite as Brazilian. I think the Cavs are going to get a guy on the team, and I think it's going to be Anderson, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's Kyrie.
Wow.
If they got both of them on the team, that would certainly be a feather in the cap for the Cavs. But their record is, you know, it is what it is. They're five games below 500. And Kyrie's got some competition at the point guard position with the way Rajon Rondo's playing, certainly with the way Brandon Jennings is playing as well.
Chris, I just want to follow up with you for a second on Kyrie because, you know, we love this kid. It's so fun watching him play, as you said. I mean, it's amazing. Again, I bring this up all the time, but I think it's worth it. I mean, he played 11 games in college. He's 19 years old. You'd never know it by the way he plays on the court and the way he acts when he's off it, the way he talks to the media. I think the sky's the limit. Do you think this kid, assuming everything stays healthy and on track, is going to become a superstar in this league?
Well, the game reminds me of Derrick Rose.
Wow.
You know, when Derrick first came into the league, he couldn't shoot the three. And it was the part of his game that really improved most from year two to year three. I think he made less than 10 three-pointers in each of his first two seasons. And then he turned into a guy who knocked down 60, 70 of them last year and the previous year. And I think that's what you really want to see from Kyrie is him develop a consistent three-point shot the way Derek does. But when I compare the two, it's because Kyrie gets to the basket same way Derek Rose does. He gets through traffic. It doesn't matter if there's three, four guys in his way. He gets through, and then he gets a shot off, which is a high-quality shot. It's not something that he has to spin high off the glass. He's so quick, he's able to lay the ball in low off the glass. And that's the part of his game that kind of reminds me of Derrick Rose. So that being said, we got a small body of work to judge him on. It's still over 20 games, and let's wait and see. But certainly, like I said before, he makes the Cavs an entertaining team to watch, and it's really so different because he's such a scrappy player. So, people will catch on and start watching the Cavs if they can put together, somewhat of a decent winning streak. And, you know, especially after the debacle of last year when they lost 26 in a row, people are always kind of looking for what's the new flavor this year and who's the it team to watch. And I think certainly Minnesota has become that in the West. And in the East, Cleveland has the opportunity to become that if they can put together some sort of a winning streak that gets them up into the 8th spot or has them sticking around the 8-9 spot for the next month and a half of the season.
Chris, that's exactly what I was going to ask you. I was going to say, how likely is it? I know it's only a third of the way in, but I think at this point we can start to see how things are going to play out. And the Cavs come home here. They've got 9 games in a row at home. How big of a stretch is this for the Cavs to possibly fight for that 8th spot?
Well, you're going to have the 8th spot's probably going to go to a sub-500 team. Right now, Milwaukee's got it, and they're 10-14, and right behind them are the Knicks at 10-15. But the Knicks are without Carmelo Anthony for 2 weeks. They recently lost 9 out of 10. They got all sorts of problems. They could fall out of the race. You can't really. I take that back. They're not going to fall out of the race because the race for the 8th spot is going to be a race to really see who can get closest to 500, and if you can go in at 30-36 or 31-35, heck, you're in. I'm a basketball fan. I'm not a fan of any team, but if I could see one first round playoff matchup, it would be the 8 seeded Cavs against the 1 seeded Miami Heat. I would come to Cleveland for games 3 and 4 of that. Just to see if how LeBron is treated and how much the Cavs embrace the new guys and how Kyrie does under pressure. So Cleveland will definitely be in it simply by virtue of the fact of there's 6 good teams, maybe 7 good teams in the East, and so the 8th spot is wide open. And look, 8 teams, if you're the 8th team and you go into the playoffs with a head of steam, you never know what can happen. Look at the Memphis Grizzlies last year. Sure. They went in as the 8th seed and they knocked off the San Antonio Spurs in the first round, and a lot of that was because Manu Ginobili got hurt in the last game of the regular season. But the Memphis Grizzlies were also a very good team and a very deep team, and I think they're way further ahead at last year than the Cavaliers are now. But for the Cavs to make it into the playoffs this year after the season they had last year would just be a tremendous, tremendous accomplishment.
Final thing, Chris, let me just ask you this. There are a lot of Cavs fans who say, you know, even if they make the 8th seed, I know what you said last year, but they're probably not going to go anywhere, unlikely to beat the Bulls or the Heat. You know, we need to rebuild. We need more young guys. Do you think, we say, listen, you can't root against your team. You don't want to be rooting for your team to lose. But what's really best for this franchise? Is it better to get that playoff experience to make that 8th seed, even if they get swept? Or are they better off being in the lottery again?
Oh, it's a no-brainer. You get in the playoffs, man. You get in the playoffs, and all of a sudden you've gone from a team that set the NBA record for most consecutive losses to a team that's turning around and is playing playoff basketball again just 2 years after LeBron left. What are you going to do in the lottery? You're going to go into the lottery with a 3% chance to win. Look, it's a deep draft, but if you go in as the worst playoff the playoff team with the worst record, in other words, if you go in as an 8th seed, you're still going to have a pick that's only a couple spots above where you're probably going to end up.
That's
anyway.
Right. That's right.
So, no, you go for the playoffs, and then you see what happens, and, you know, who knows what happens in games 1 and 2, because the visiting team can really put the pressure on the home team by stealing game 1 or 2, and if the Cavaliers were able to do that against the Bulls or the Heat, and if there is a God, it would be against the Heat. Then all of a sudden, everybody's focus turns to the Cleveland Cavaliers and whether they get a chance to pull off a monumental upset. And you go for the playoffs, and then you take your chances. No one is fooling themselves into believing that the Cavaliers are going to win the NBA championship this year or anytime soon. However, you make the leap into the playoffs so soon after losing LeBron and having that debacle last year, and you were well on your way back.
Final thing, Chris, in about 30 seconds, there's been a lot of rumors of Ramon Sessions getting traded possibly to the Lakers. What's the latest on him or anybody else? I mean, there's obviously, you know, I'm sure a lot of people will be interested in Anderson Varejão. I don't think they should trade him. Well, what are you hearing on the Cavs trade front? And again, in about 30 seconds.
Quick question. Ramon Sessions, we got another year on his contract after this year?
Ramon Sessions, you know what? I'm going to tell you right now. I do not know.
I'm going to look it up as I answer yeah. that, because I think the guy who's going to the Lakers, look, the Lakers need a point guard, and they're going
right.
to get one. And they have an $8.9 million trade exception. And the guy that really fits them is Kirk Heinrich from the Atlanta Hawks, because Kirk's making $8 million, and he's on the last year of his contract.
Yeah,
and
Sessions
the Atlanta
is
Hawks
not.
Right now are a tax team, and they want to get out of the luxury tax.
Right.
So if the Lakers want to get Kirk Heinrich for a guy like Andrew Goldilock, the rookie from College of Charleston, and a pick, I think that trade can be done. And I think they'd rather have Kirk Heinrich than Ramon Sessions, to be honest with you. If Kirk Heinrich is not a guy they can get, or they can get Ramon Sessions at a lower price, as long as they're not tying up a lot of long money on him, I think they would do it. But they still have long money tied up in Steve Blake, which is why I think Kirk Heinrich is a much more interesting or much more viable choice for the Lakers when they do go out there and acquire somebody into that big trade exception.
His website is SheridanHoops.com. Chris Sheridan, thanks so much for joining us.
Okay, Adam, and Justin.